My guest for this episode was my friend Emily Oh, and in this episode we talk about her MBA program, we talk about crypto and investing. Yeah, I hope you enjoy. Take care. Between all of these stops and starts, did you get a chance to make some tea yet?
I do. I have my tea.
Okay. Tell me about the tea that you have.
I have blackberry sage. It's a black tea, and it is made, the brand is the Republic of Tea. I like these. They're just round tea bags.
Okay. Yeah, we went for a similar vibe here. I got a... I have a lot of Lipton tea, so I have a black Lipton tea, and I have some, apparently on TikTok there was a thing where you'd like cut up like lemons and you like put them in ice cube trays and fill them with water. So I did like put some ice cubes in there with lemon water in there.
That sounds good.
Yeah, it is like a lot easier than having to like actually cut up a lemon right now. Mm-hmm. First remote recording attempt. Yeah, and I wanted to, one of the things I wanted to like just talk with you about was like you're doing your MBA or had started your MBA, and I think you'd mentioned you recently like took a break from that. Like what motivated you to start going into it, like start the process? Because you had you had like a pretty successful career prior to that.
Yeah, and I do. So the reasoning behind it was my background was not in business as far as an undergrad degree. I was going for, you know, science and biology, and my, you know, if life all went to plan, I'd be, you know, in med school. But it didn't, life happens, you know, people, I had obligations in Minnesota, and you're not always granted. You don't get that guarantee that you go to med school or whatever in Minnesota. So then my other option, I was looking at pharmacy school, and that's actually where I was going.
You were like in pharmacy school?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, I literally never knew that about you.
Yeah. So that's the route, like, once you get like your bachelor's, right? And I don't even think you have to have a bachelor's. I think you can even do like 3 years of your undergrad, and then you could, I think in some way you can still go to pharmacy school without technically having your 4 year.
Yeah,
but anyway, that's
Go ahead, go ahead.
And that's the route that I was at. So, you know, science, medicine, you've got 3 years of classroom, and then you've got a year of rounds residency. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I really like the chemistry behind it all. And I realized going there, and now, especially after speaking with some of the people that I went to school with, it is just more of a retail counting pills by, you know, fives for the rest of your life. You know, it's just, it wasn't what I had wanted. Right now, especially with the job market, especially in the pharmaceutical field, there are a lot of people that are, I feel as far as for me, I made the right decision.
Can I ask like when, like what year this was taking place?
Oh boy, this was way back in like 2005.
Okay.
2009, I think.
Okay.
So yeah, it was 2009, and then I got a couple amazing, you know, opportunities where I started at a small company, and I was with them, and I put in the work, kind of worked myself up. And I had great, I was right time, right place, you know, hard work, and I loved it. And business and operations is what I kind of fell into. But knowing that my background and my education did not coincide with that, I wanted to have a degree to back up my business experience. Whether, you know, it made my resume stronger, it made my skills stronger. So that's kind of how I ended up deciding to go for a master's in business, because my background was not, my degree was not in business.
Yeah, I honestly forgot that you did not complete it. I thought you have such like a business mind, and you're one of the people when I want to like nerd out about like random, you know, business or finance theories. Like you're one of the people I go to.
Oh yeah, and for sure. And you know, I wasn't the only one, because you know, as we know, the last, you know, year and a half, 2 years have been crazy. And it affected everything. It affected all the business industries, including school and academics. And the going from going to classes on campus to having campus shut down and everyone kind of having no plan and got pushed into a virtual learning. And then as far as like travel, because every year or every degree, you have to do an international residency. And with the travel being shut down, you know, that's also off.
Yeah. So can I ask what university is that?
This is Carlson School. So just right here at the U of M.
It's a big time school.
It is. It's highly rated. It's great. It's fantastic. The instructors are great. But with everything that happened and shut down, especially in the last semester, there were some of us that, you know, for the price that we're paying, for the experiences now that we don't get, like the international residency experience, it made more sense to make it up when things were back.
Yeah.
Either on campus or they had a better virtual learning set up. And then traveling too was a big part of it. So,
right. Can I ask, did the communication between like the university and like the students, it sounds like it was kind of chaotic. Is there a degree of truth to that?
It was, you know, because remember in the beginning, we thought everything was just going to be shut down for a couple weeks and everyone would, you know, go back to work in 2 weeks, but it lasted. And these things that you can't do in person anymore had to be switched over online, and people weren't prepared for that. There was a little bit of, I mean, the communication was great. The school is fantastic. You know, I highly, highly recommend the school. But there was a bit of scrambling that happened. I think with just, you know, everybody too.
Yeah, and I, as I'm thinking about it, you're also a mother, so your child was like going through a very similar.
Oh my gosh, that was a mess.
How did your daughter take these transitions?
I feel so bad for, you know, not only the parents that now have to be the homeschool teacher last minute, and everybody is now either working from home and learning school from home, or you have to figure out how they can be homeschooled while you are out working. And it was just a terrible predicament for so many families. I was lucky that I was working from home, but at the same time, when at the end of that year, the first year, her school didn't have a plan.
Yeah.
And it was very chaotic. It was very frustrating for so many people. And I am so fortunate that I was able to stay employed. And she has, you know, she's in a good school district. And she's so fortunate. You know, they sent her home with an iPad for virtual learning. And we have reliable internet here. And that is something that so many kids didn't have.
Yeah. And she's like around the age where she can like start to be, I think it's like a little bit of a stretch to be fully independent, but she's like starting to get to the age where it's like she start being independent for like larger periods of time.
Right. Yeah. At least she wasn't in like kindergarten or preschool. I don't understand how those kids were expected to sit in the chair. She struggled too because there wasn't much of a reasonably so. In school.
Yeah.
And she's so social. She's such a social butterfly that these kids need that interaction with students and teachers. And she's a tactile learner and she does better in person than, you know, watching something on a screen. But it was amazing because she can now navigate things. I feel like I'm fairly techie, right? But she can navigate so many more features on Zoom than I knew existed. But I'm so glad that she's back in school in person because the kids definitely suffered.
Yeah. So going back to the MBA, like how many, do you know, have an idea of like how many in your cohort were like, I'm paying way too much money to not get this international experience?
Right. So I don't, because the international experience or global experience is required with all the MBA courses. So I was accepted into the exact MBA course. And there are, I think like four different kinds of courses, that you can go down the path of. And so I don't know, because all of them required a global experience. Okay. So I don't know how many decided to put it off.
Right.
Cost too is different between all of them.
Between like the four different like tracks?
Yeah. So the executive MBA I was accepted into is alternating Fridays and Saturdays. Right. And it's for 20 months, 4 semesters, and it comes with everything you need. So it comes with, you know, your computer and everything like already loaded, all your coursework, everything is loaded in there, but you still have to make it on campus. You still have to network, and you still have like study groups that you still have to partake in. But okay. That's that. But there's also full-time, part-time, and online MBA that people can choose to go about. And those schedules, you know, are like Monday through Thursday during the days. During the weeks. And I couldn't do that. So that's why I, you know, if I'm going to have a career.
Right. You're working now.
That's why. Mm-hmm. And the requirements are different for all of them too. Yeah.
Right.
To get into them. So with this one, you know, you had to have a certain GPA. You had to already have a career that you were on. And then you also had to have 2 years of management experience. So when I interviewed with them, I had to bring my resume and my references and everything and my transcripts.
So like your like college GPA stuff, like undergrad stuff?
Yeah. So they do ask for your transcripts for your undergrad. They have to, you know, they'll call your references, they'll go through your resume with you and make sure that you meet all those requirements.
Did you have to take, one of the standardized tests?
The GMAT? No.
Yeah.
Nope. So, you don't have to take a GMAT for any of Okay. So you don't have to take the GMAT for the executive MBA.
Okay.
You can. So my GPA for undergrad, the minimum to get accepted was 3.2. And my GPA was above that. So I did not have to take the GMAT. You can if your GPA, maybe you're struggling a little bit, maybe you're kind of on the cusp or you don't need it. They'll take that into consideration too. But that's optional for that course.
Okay.
I don't think you have to take the GMAT for the other courses either. I want to say you don't have to, but it's optional.
Okay. Sure. Yeah. One of the things that, like, for me personally, like, I like enjoyed learning, but I never like wanted to. I never wanted to feel like I was collecting degrees.
Oh. Right.
And also, like, cost wise, I was like, this is a lot of money. And another thing was like taking standardized testing. It was just like, I've done those, like studied hard for those, and just studying for a standardized test just doesn't feel very good. It feels like a waste of a time.
Right. Yeah. And I know some, like I love learning. I love school. I've always tested really well, but a lot of people, there are so many smart people out there that they just don't test well. And they do, I mean, so yeah, because testing is a,
it's like standardized testing, like being good at it is a specific skill.
Yeah.
And the transferable skill, like nature of it is like kind of questionable.
It is. It is. Like, and there's so many people so much more capable than me and so much smarter than me. And, you know, they just don't test. And
yeah. Yeah. School itself is also like a, like,
it
is a skill that you can be good at that does not translate to our career success necessarily.
Oh, like no, absolutely. And some of the most, like the smartest, most capable people don't do well in mainstream school education systems.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things you mentioned, as part of your like executive program, like in addition to the, to like the materials itself, you mentioned like lots of study groups. Is that, was that like a mandatory component as well?
Yep. Yep. So we started off with, and like I said, there's different MBA pathways you can go down. Mm-hmm. So I only have experience in the one. So you start with like an orientation weekend, and then you have, you know, just, yeah. And then you have your immersion week, which is, you know, networking, career, like job search, career development. And then you get put in these for the semester, you get put in these groups and the groups get shuffled. So you're not stuck in the same group with the same people for the same year, but it is mandatory. You do have to meet. There are times where you do have to meet with them.
Is there like a specific objective that the course is like, hey, like, here's what you got to get done.
Are you asking like for a syllabus? I do have,
or for, no, sorry, for like the study groups.
It's more to put, it's to go over material, it's to study, it's to prepare yourself for tests, and it's great for networking too. So they kind of cover multiple facets in these study groups.
There must be like a pretty wide variety of people, like a wide variety of backgrounds in these groups or in these MBA programs then, right? Like
there are, you have young whippersnappers that come right out of, you know, their 4 year, so, you know, early 20s, that go straight into a master's. And then you've got seasoned professionals that are going back to school, 30s, in their 30s, 40s, even older, 50s. And they come from different backgrounds, you know, some have to take out loans, some, you know, don't have to take out loans. They come from different countries, they come from out of state, they come from in state. It's there are a lot of women in it. So
what's that like? It feels like I remember being in college and undergrad and feeling like, wow, there's like so many people here. I'm around like some really wealthy people, some people who are like about my level, my family's level of wealth, some maybe a little bit lower. But in terms of like career development, like we were all like undergrad, so it's not like there were that many of us established career. Like what? It feels like a really good melting pot of like people who are at least on some level interested in furthering their careers.
And that's what I really enjoyed about going, this is what I enjoy about going back to school, period. Especially as an adult, is the adults want to be there.
Yeah.
With undergrad, I know a lot of kids are there because it's what's expected of them.
Yeah.
Yep. So it's great. And everybody has, real life experiences that you can pick their brains with, and you can sit and you can problem solve. And that's another perk of this, is if you run into a hurdle or something at work, you can bring it to class and you can get, your professor's input, and not only that, but professionals that have been in the workforce for years, things that work and don't work in real life. Like, I feel like undergrad, things are great in theory, right? They
Yeah.
teach you a lot of stuff. In theory, it sounds great, but in practice, it doesn't always work.
Yeah. There's also just like a lot of like learning and maturation and like identity exploration that happens in undergrad that probably is not going to happen quite in the same way in an MBA
Right.
program.
There is definitely not, like, I never felt peer pressure. I don't know. I went through school. I didn't think about other people's financial standings, or statuses. I didn't think about that. It didn't bother me. But I think I came from a place where I was lucky that it was never, I didn't feel bad because of my family's financial position. I was very fortunate for that, but I just never thought about that.
Right.
And when you go for your MBA, I mean, you really don't, or at least I really didn't think about that either.
Yeah, I know talking about money is the thing most people are like pretty like uncomfortable with doing.
But there were the
Yeah.
pressures that, going through your identity crisis as going from high school to college and then being in your young 20s, and then, there's not that pressure to go out and party or stay in and study, or, who
Yeah.
cares what kind of shoes you're wearing? When you're in your 30s, it just doesn't matter.
I feel like you have like a higher tolerance for like whiteness than I do. Whereas I might be like, fuck this, I'm out of here. Like, is it really white in your MBA program?
The majority, they were.
Okay.
But I think where I'm going to piss off a lot of people is saying that I think I have a lot of tolerance in some ways, and then I'm very intolerant in other ways, and I'm very judgmental in other ways. But with
I
everything,
like it's not a, I never felt like you were unaware, but I felt like you had a higher level of like putting up with it than sometimes than I would in some ways, like
I don't know. I feel like I can control what I can control. End game. I have a goal in mind,
yeah.
and I have to get to that goalpost. And if that tolerates or put up with some stuff to get there, I will. On the other hand, though, I know that everybody is a person, and everybody's going through their own trials and tribulations. And while it must be nice to have nothing bad ever happen to you and everything given to you, it's got to be harder in some ways too, because any little thing that happens in your life trips you up even harder, right?
Yeah, like
For sure.
the first time
For
you
sure.
get punched, punches you in the mouth,
Oh yeah,
if you've been punched in the mouth before by life, it's devastating. But if
yeah.
you've like spent a lot of your time like slapping
Getting
you in
punched in
the
the
face,
mouth.
and then you get a real punch in the face, you're like, yeah, that sucks, but I felt prepared for that.
Yeah, right. So great analogy. Yeah, so everybody that is there wants to be there. Everybody,
Right.
they've worked, they've had experience, they've had a career under their belt. So I think in that way it's easier, because everybody's at least had to work to get there, versus an undergrad where, if you have money, somehow
Yeah, if you have,
school paid
you have
for,
money,
you're there.
I'm going to shuffle you in there
Yeah,
with
yeah.
minimal buy-in from you.
Oh,
Like,
sure. And they come in with like, oh yeah,
yeah,
with big
they
chips
get to
on their
the application.
shoulders, and everything's like been given to them,
Yep, the
and they
big
haven't had to
donation.
work for anything. Yeah.
For all of your living expenses, all of your food expenses, you'll have a play money, you know, allowance, and if you're really wealthy, you probably somebody paid to submit an application on your behalf, maybe a big donation to grease the wheels a little bit. Like, you
Yeah.
just kind of have to be breathing. Oh, there's something I wanted to ask you about. Sorry, we were talking about
my tolerance for white people.
Tolerance for white people.
I like people. I'm an extrovert. I hate to say this. I'm an extrovert. I want to like everybody.
Yeah. Okay. Here was my question. So I feel like what is it? It's November 2021. It feels from my vantage point, like just looking at like financial news and markets and everything, it feels like we're in this interesting time in the business world where like there is a reckoning of like, hey, the capitalist machine that we had all grown up in our whole lives so far, like is like, there are going to be real environmental consequences to this within our lifetimes. Like not like our children's lives, not within our grandchildren's lives, like in our lifetimes. And there's like this, like more discourse about it. At the same time, a lot of discourse around like social justice topics are starting to have really swelled up in a way that, you know, 20 years ago was just not a thing. Like, do you feel that those kind of like not directly related, but they are like kind of intrinsically related topics? Do you feel that like showing up in your MBA program?
Yes,
I guess I'm
but
just
on the
asking.
other
If,
hand,
like, there's this. Sorry, go ahead.
Yes, but on the other hand, it's a financial institution too. Like they have their own agenda. I mean, schools, universities, they want money, right?
Right.
So they are teaching this curriculum to put their students in a better place, but them as an educational institution also in a better place, right?
Right, right.
So if they tell you, well, you know, MBA, that degree doesn't mean as much anymore as it did, you know, 20 years ago, they'd kind of be shooting themselves in the foot. So
right.
Even though that is true, that's not, you know, that's not what they preach.
Right.
So,
yeah. I was wondering, because there's oftentimes like a lag between like what's going on in the real world and how that shows up, you know, in your coursework, like under whatever the level is. Are the schools responding to this? Like, do you think that's what that's going to look like? Because like I think capitalism is like too big to just like entirely give up on. It's just too entrenched in the way the world works. Also, like, what is a healthier, more sustainable version of that look like?
Right. So professors are themselves individuals, and they have great thoughts and their own great ideas.
Yeah.
So if you want, I mean, there are, you know, individual professors that will bring up things, or classmates will bring up ideas, theories, concerns, and it will get talked about, but it's not like part of the coursework.
Sure.
You know, sure, you have like an ethics. You go through a couple ethics courses, and you know, you have the econ classes, but capitalism, you're right, it's such a big machine that keeps, and everyone just keeps, you know, moving with it, whether they want to or not, because it's part of the university too.
Yeah, I mean, it's like an efficient like way to organize markets. Like it's not prone there. You can you can create market situations that are like that are exploitative and abusive, but like capitalism is not a system of morality, and a lot of people unfortunately treat it as such, and that gets you in a lot of trouble because mm-hmm. like just because it's permissible doesn't make it good. Like you right. can pay people minimum wage. That's not a livable wage, and you should not be deluding yourself that you're making this person's life better oh. by paying them, you know, minimum wage, but it's allowable within the framework of capitalism. You're playing by the rules.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And we do touch on that too. But it's more framed around how to make a business successful, you know? So if you're going to pay everyone $3 an hour with no benefits, make them work 90 hours a week, your business is gonna, you know,
it's not a viable business model.
It's not a viable business model, but they don't, it's not necessarily framed as ethics. Yeah, we know that you're a bad boss and you're a bad business owner. Also, you
committed the sin of not being creating an unviable business model.
It is. So we get that. Yeah.
Oh, that's terrible. Okay. Because, like, I guess as I'm thinking about it, like, pure academia might be more interested in like researching these topics and like talking about this, but MBA might be more like grounded in like
we take like, you know, statistics like and business, you know, analytics. We do take, you know, those classes. We do have like a leadership, you know, you do have a leadership course where, you know, it's like what does it mean to be a good leader, not a good boss, but, you know, a good leader. So, you know, and so there is stuff like that in there, you know, it's how to be a good right. person, not just a tyrant that rules your business.
Gets results.
Yeah. Yeah. So there is that. I don't want to say that, you know, it's completely a one terrible. Yeah.
No. Yeah. I'm not trying to paint like the system. Well, we know what it is, yeah, but I'm not trying to make it worse, sound worse than it is. And all these like SJW stuff and the environment are just like things that I'm interested in. But yeah, I also understand it is what it is.
Yeah, no, we've got a lot of great professors. We've got a lot of great, you know, business owners as, you know, classmates or managers as classmates. And they are truly trying to better themselves, not only themselves, but everyone they network with, they work with, that they have interactions with. So there are good people. There are a lot of good people.
Sure.
But like I said, I mean, it's university. They're trying to get money too. So.
Right. Has crypto come up in your classes?
You know,
it's just, I don't know how to explain it, but it feels like something everybody's talking about.
It is. It does. It doesn't come up as.
I can't believe it comes up. Who's asking this question?
A lot of us. Everybody. I have people at work, you know, that aren't in my finance department, and they're asking me questions about, my dad is retired. Okay, so my dad was VP for, now it's Royal Bank of Canada, right?
Yeah.
When he was there as Dane Bosworth. So he was hard in the stock market and bonds, and he was a broker. He was very successful in what he did.
Yeah.
And I get calls from him, and he's like, what is this? What is this crypto? What should I be doing with it? So everybody asks me about it, but for him and for everybody else too, if you don't know what it is, then don't put your money in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So even with like decades and decades worth of investment experience under his belt, I just tell him, you know, if you don't, just leave it alone, especially because he's like 400 years old. And
Yeah,
He doesn't even know how to send an email, so.
that's a sound advice that you should invest in things that you understand, and if you don't understand it, you should not invest in it. Because like you're not, you might not even know what factors go into like making it go up or down.
For sure, for sure. And I love the market, right? So if anybody has questions, I never give them like financial advice telling them what they should invest in, but I'll give them, basic knowledge and teach them how to like read a chart, or like identify trends or do their research, what catalysts make or break a company and the stock that, they might have along with it. So like I will give them basic information. I love teaching people. I mean, I could geek out on this stuff all day,
Yeah,
but
same.
I won't tell them, you need to invest in this. And people ask me all the time, what should I invest in? And I was like, what companies do you like? Do your research in those companies and what you know, and I'll teach you like, how to read a chart or whatever, but.
So you're talking a little too much like foundational stuff. Let's go back to
Oh,
the
sorry.
What? I'm really curious. What do discussions about crypto in your MBA classes look like? What are
Everybody
the
has their own
professors you
opinion,
have?
right? Because nobody
What's
knows. Nobody knows for sure.
that?
Everybody has their own opinion. They're like, no, it's a fad. We're gonna get hacked. The risk of hacking into people's wallets, whatever, is gonna be much higher in the future, and it's gonna make people not want to invest, and it's going to ruin the crypto market. There's that side of it. Another side is, it's not real money. A tweet from, Musk, it just proves that it's not reliable. I mean, and then you've got those diehards, which they're like, well, everything is going to turn into crypto. There's not going to be cash and gold and silver in the future. Everything's going to be,
Everything's gonna
cryptocurrency.
be on the blockchain.
Yeah. And the fact that anybody can make a crypto coin. I could make one. I could name it Kai and I could put your face on it.
Yay.
Right? Yeah. So
It's interesting 'cause like you and I have talked about crypto before too. And I think for me like the next step is like really looking at like use case, not the not that like the technology itself, the blockchain works. I guess the question for me that's coming up is like why can't financial institutions just like the consortium that creates USB, like for the USB, like the this rectangular head, you know what I mean? Like it's a consortium of like, I don't know, like 10 or 20 different like tech firms, like Intel and Cisco, I think are two of them. Like why can't a couple of financial institutions just like come up with like, hey, like we're gonna make this our own blockchain, like it's gonna be pegged to whatever. It's just gonna make it easier for us to transfer money. Like why can't one of the things that crypto tries to solve is like, it takes forever to transfer money from one country to another. It's expensive. Like, why can't the banks, like or financial institutions, just like appropriate that for themselves?
Yeah, I see what you're saying, but do we want the big financial institutions to also take over all the crypto in the market? I don't think so.
Well,
If that's
they could just like share it amongst themselves. Like we could like be none the wiser that behind the scenes they're using
right,
blockchain,
and
right? Like,
there
why can't
are companies that are doing that.
it go up?
There are, and it's getting more mainstream, like MasterCard and well, you and I have both had experience, dabbling with PayPal and their crypto platform, which sucks. Don't do it.
So I'm still on it.
I am not. And gambling, like sports betting, and
I want
it's
there to be more
getting
sports betting. I want to do stupid things with my money sometimes.
I do stupid stuff with money too. No, I get it. I get it. It's a socially acceptable gambling. I understand. Oh, I do stupid stuff with money too. No, so like Oh man, one of my SPACs just tanked and I'm kicking myself for that one too. But so I mean, it's becoming more mainstream. They're doing it. It takes time. But it's,
yeah, I guess
it's happening.
Yeah, I'm really curious about like what if right now it feels like the wild, wild west of cryptocurrency.
Oh, for sure.
Like there's really little to no legislation. A lot of the larger crypto players are like doing everything they can to avoid being labeled a security by the IRS. And then for listeners who like aren't as aware of these things, like once you're labeled a security, then you have to be, then you're fall under the like the rules and regulations that like any other financial institution would have to follow.
Oh,
so there is
sure.
tremendous incentive to be not labeled a security, even though like in all the way they talk about crypto is basically a security.
Right. So what, you know, a difference between like crypto and I don't know, just the stock that you can purchase on market, right? There is protection behind investments, and there's protection behind like your Roth, your, you know, your retirement. There's insurance and there's protection behind that. Crypto, I mean, in a lot of ways,
you're
SOL.
If you're hacked, you're hacked. With your, you know, retirement accounts, your investing accounts, I don't, there are certain protections. It's not quite, like bulletproof.
No.
But there are certain protections that you have. I think you are like technically responsible for not getting hacked to some degree.
And even
in itself, if they're hacked, I think you have some level of protection.
And you're right, with crypto, it is wild, wild west. Let's say you buy it at, you know, $4 and it goes up to $12 and you sell it and the website goes down. It happened to me. I made 220% off a coin and I tried to sell it and the website, Binance went down at that time. And by the time I logged in, my sell order went through, but at a much lower price point. So, and there's nothing you can do about it. They're just like, oops, our website went down. You're just SOL. You just lost all your money. And there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. I think there's very little you can do about it in any other, like on Robinhood or Fidelity. I was thinking you have like no protection over pump and dumps too.
No,
like,
you don't. And what was the one recently? Oh, I just watched the whole.
Is it a coin
debacle.
Or what?
Yeah, it was a crypto, and it started very. It went up like, oh man.
Was it like the pump and dump like up and down?
It was.
I don't know what you could be talking about.
Everybody sold it, and then the server and the website and everything just got shut down. It was an internal move. They pumped it really, really like it was in the sense, and it went up to like dollars, like tens of dollars, and then everything got shut down. The servers, the website.
Was it one of the knockoff Dogecoins?
No. Oh man, it was a bit. Oh, what was it? I'm having a complete brain fart. I was just talking about this at work the other day too. And I watched it, and I didn't.
Did you try to get in?
No. If you watch it and you watch like the candlesticks, and you know that, and you do your research on the company, it was just. It was weird, and it went in. It was just in a day, and then everything just shut down, and people just, you either made a lot of money, but the majority of people just lost so much money. So that's the company. No, I like to play a little safer. I know you're a little riskier than I am, but
I think I talk a little more bigger than like I actually like wind up doing.
Yeah. No, I'm boring.
you're the one who's like most spent the most time on like transactions on crypto.
I don't know. It's
I mean, it's fine. I'm not like, I appreciate that about you.
I like my research. I like watching it. I like it. It's probably the most excitement I get sometimes. So
it is exciting watching the things go off.
Yeah.
It's exciting, like when you like lock in profits mm-hmm. successfully. I love that shitcoin is just like a thing that has entered a lot of people's vernacular.
Oh yeah, for sure. And you know what? I appreciate, you know, with GameStop and the vast AMC. Amount of people who had never ever thought about investing in anything. Sure, it's, you know, high risk. A lot of people lost money. A lot of people will lose money. Some people made a lot of money. But the fact that it brought so many people to the table, you know, and got them thinking about investing and then cryptocurrency, that's a good thing as long as long as they can be safe about it. So I appreciate that. There's a huge surge of investors now, retail investors that just weren't there before.
Yeah, like I am willing to criticize capitalism. Also, like the tools of wealth creation when they're like spread out more throughout like the population. Mm-hmm. Like I think that's a good thing overall.
Mm-hmm.
And like I think we're living in such a super interesting time where. Like, I don't think we've ever lived in a time where there have been so many sophisticated investors. Like even like the meme phrase, buy the dip.
Yeah,
it's like kind of a dumb thing to do, but also there's like a lot of wisdom in that too.
Yeah.
At times, operative word.
Buy the dip, but you also have to be smart and know why it's dipping. You know what I mean?
Like, why? Also, like, if you're going to do something risky like that, like, the amount that you're putting in, you should be okay with losing entirely.
Yeah.
It's, like, the riskier it is, the more okay you should be with losing the entirety of it. Like, for me, my like, shits and giggles moment was, do you remember Luckin Coffee?
Mm.
Luckin Coffee was, it was billed as, like, the Starbucks of China.
Yep.
And it was like, it was just like, it had these like incredible growth numbers, incredible number of stores opening. I think the profits were like incredible. And it was just like viewed as a huge Chinese success story. And it turned out like a huge amount of the profits were like completely fabricated. Like I think it was like 2/3 were fabricated. And, it like very much changed the investing, you know, value that you're buying into. And so its value like tanked hard. And I put in like $5 or $6 on Robinhood to buy like that equivalent amount of stock because it was so cheap at that time.
Uh-huh.
And it went up like there's so many retail investors who I think were buying the dip that its stock price went up from a bottom, and it went up like it must have gone up almost like 10x or something, because I walked away with like $55. So like buy the dip, but also like I wasn't putting like half of my portfolio value. It was like it was tiny. It was like a fun amount for me to watch.
Right.
And like the gain was like close to 10x. I don't remember the exact numbers, but it was like the final amount was I walked away with $55, which like for no research and just like shits and giggles, like I feel like I got my money's worth.
Oh, for sure. That's like the best way to start out too. Like, put a few bucks in and just watch it and see. You learn a lot by putting, you know, a few bucks of your own money in it. Oh, for sure. I've got fun things like that too. It always kills me when I hear these stories about like parents putting their kids' college fund or their putting a second mortgage on their house, or, you know, like Lost Porn. Like, I look at those Lost Porn.
Lost Porn keeps you. I love that. Can you watch it? Are you? What's your feel? What's your attitude towards Lost Porn?
You know, part of me is like, if they have $1 million to lose, then maybe it's okay. You know what I mean? Or if they lose 50,000, maybe they're in a financial place where 50,000 isn't anything to them. I want to strangle them. I want to take them. You know, I feel bad for them, but at the same time, I'm irritated, even though it's not my money. They're just so, and it's not even like well thought out investments.
Oh,
right?
No, it's never.
It's yeah. It's always like buying on, because
there's zero diversification.
Yeah, zero, because they heard hedging. About it through some guy.
You're all in one specific like direction of the market going up or your specific security is going up or down.
And by the time they hear about it, it's already at the peak, and then they dump a whole bunch of money in it. They don't do any research, and then
they oftentimes do like options plays, and that's just
oh my gosh.
Okay, so backtracking a little for listeners who might not be as like interested or have knowledgeable about this, like Lost Porn that we were talking about is very commonly posted about on the subreddit, especially Wall Street Bets.
Mm-hmm.
There's Lost Porn where people lose staggering amounts of money, and then the other hand of that is what do they call it? Do you just call it gains? Do they even call it like gain porn?
Gains. I don't know.
They just call it gains. So I think it's already a little telling that like Lost Porn has the word porn in it, and gains is just gains.
Yeah, because everybody wants to watch this train wreck go down, and they post.
Yeah, the train wreck is. Yeah, the train wreck is somehow a little more interesting mm-hmm. than like somebody making it big. It's a little like motherfucker. Like, I want to be that guy. So I feel like that keeps it from like the gains porn being like as interesting.
Uh-huh.
Lost Porn is like, oh, you sad motherfucker. You loser. I'm not you. I feel like that's my. It's like
porn. It is like the porn categories. Like, who wants to watch vanilla happy couples when you can watch, you know, a huge train wreck of a situation with multiple people and their input and everything?
Yeah, I watch Breaking Bad not because Walter White is a happy family man. I want to watch The Descent into Darkness.
So that makes sense. Yeah. and you're right. And people who don't know, and then they play and options are meant to be played like insurance, right?
Yeah.
But people don't. They don't know what it is. And
So options are like financial instruments. They're like a derivative of something else. And like, you can use them in a way to like hedge, mm-hmm. To like protect yourself. Like, if you think the market's going to go up, you might use options to protect yourself if the market goes down. That's kind of what it was like intended to be. But also you can like double, triple, quadruple on the market, the direction you think the market's going in, and have zero protection against the other direction that it's in, which can be horrible. It can lead to some truly horrible consequences.
Yep, and that's what a lot of people who don't know, they just go, like that poor kid that committed suicide.
Yeah.
He didn't know, and he was a brand new investor. Yep. And options.
Yeah. There's also options that can. Like, there's several different types of options.
Yep.
I don't know them well enough off the top of my head, but there are some options where, if the market moves against you, like, you could have, like, there's no theoretical limit to your losses.
Yeah.
And like, those you should be really careful of, because, you know, unlimited, potentially unlimited, uncapped losses is pretty fucking big deal.
Not only do you lose everything, you can owe.
You can owe more than you had. Yeah. Which is horrible. It's terrible. Like don't put yourself in that position. Cover your ass somehow.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a lot to learn. If you're willing to put in the work, it's I find it very interesting. But again, I was lucky enough to grow up in a very financial household, right? Like grew up back in the day watching stocks and in the newspaper as a kid. Because like I said, dad was a broker and that's kind of what we did in the newspaper and we, you know, watch companies or whatever. But I've always played it safer. When we were a kid and we were on a cruise boat and we were in the casino and my dad gave all us kids $20 to go play, you know, slot machines or whatever.
Did you just pocket it?
I did. I was the only kid that had $20 in my pocket at the end of the night. And I was like, that's $20 more than I had at the beginning.
It's fun. And it's a deep rabbit hole that you can go down. And like, I wish there were more, like people who are interested in social justice, like looking into financial markets. Cause like some of it is like interesting and some of it is also like, how do I put it? Like, I feel like you people should understand this better, if only to criticize it more specifically and more accurately. Yeah. Like Elon Musk coming like his being taxed on unrealized gains. Mm-hmm. Like that kind of really sucks. And this is not like I feel bad for the billionaires, but it sets a really kind of a uncomfortable precedent. Like wait, did that actually go through? Like being you can tax people on unrealized gains.
So I just had this discussion at work, and they are cracking down on taxes. This is, you know, as a business, having remote workers, having products shipped to other states, revenue, it's they're cracking down. And so there are, I don't know where the laws are right now, but I know at work we are doing a lot of prevention. So there is, if you go to them and say, this is the product, these are the people, this is our revenue, these are our gains, these are our losses, and you go to them ahead of time, they can only back tax you a certain amount of time. If you don't prevent that, if you don't go up to them and take preventative measures, there is no statute of limitations. They can they can go back as far as they want and tax you.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I feel like a lot of people talk about tax reform, which I think like is like a thing that's needed, but also like closing existing tax loopholes and enforcing them is going to go a huge distance too.
Yeah. And so that's going to hit the billionaires and just the mom and pop shops too.
Yeah.
And nobody likes to be hit with that big of a surprise.
Right. Yeah. It's a little easier to like feel bad for the mom and pop shops rather than the Elon Musk. Oh man. What's with him wearing scarves all of a sudden?
I don't know. Was
that his new style?
I just don't get him. I don't know. You know, there are a whole bunch of rumors about him. But just the fact that he can tweet something like, if you have an idea to prevent this or do this, I'll give you, you know, $6 billion or I'll, you know, I'll sell all my stock or I'll, you just like, he's brilliant, but he's exhausting. I feel like he's just like on this manic, just.
Yeah.
Oh, 24/7. So yeah, I don't know.
His behavior is a little erratic. In him. His fans are like kind of remind me a lot of Joe Rogan's fans.
there's a cult following, yeah, for sure.
There's like the behavior of Elon Musk fans and Joe Rogan fans are like one to one.
Yes, I enjoy watching both, and I enjoy watching both Musk and Joe Rogan and all the news and the podcasts and the tweets and just like with anybody else, you know, you tell me that I'm more tolerant of people. I don't necessarily think that's it. I think that it's healthy to have people that stretch you, even if you don't agree with everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I guess to be like more specific, like I feel like you have a higher ability to like interact with people and challenge some of those assumptions that other people might have. Whereas fuck you. Like I'm out of here. I'm not brave enough to like tell you fuck you to your face, but I hope you are aware of this by my leaving that I'm saying fuck you.
No. And you know what? You know what though? That is good to have though too, because the majority of people will not change their mind. They've got, you know, one set of beliefs.
Yeah.
And
yep.
No matter how much you can talk to them or try to convince them, you're not going to change their mind. That's just how they think. And that's how it's going to be. There are some people, there's a lower percentage of people who will have a discussion with you. They will take in your information. And then, you know, because maybe they have not had that information before, they can make a more informed or educated, you know, decision for themselves. And that is the category that I actively try to fall into, because I can't, even if I don't agree with somebody, I can have a civilized conversation with them. And even if they end up getting pissed at me and they, you know, shut the door on me, at least, you know, I get more information that I didn't have or a different perspective. I know that everybody's reality is formed on the way they grew up or their experiences, you know, and that makes their reality. Right. And my reality is different. So
I will say peeking behind the doors of people with very different views is sometimes like very enlightening, and sometimes like its own rabbit hole that you're wow, this is fascinating.
Yeah.
Like you believe this shit.
Yeah. But no, for sure. You have healthy ways of dealing with it too, and you can't let it drain and suck the life out of you.
Thank you for saying that and validating that. I also sometimes feel I'm a little too conflict avoidant, and that's like, that feels like a growth area for me. I don't know what that looks like, but aspirationally, I like to grow in that direction.
You know, that's good though. Because self-improvement is like a lifelong journey, right? There are people who are like, I'm good where I'm at, and you know, I'm going to stay this way forever, and there's nothing wrong with me. I've got no improvements to make, which is so wrong.
Yeah, the way you are right now was exactly the same as you were in high school. Maybe you're better at video games. Right. And it's like, oh my God, I feel like I'm talking to a high school, like this is gross.
Yeah, you peaked in high school. Great. Yeah. So I totally respect that you can say, you know, I know that conflict is a weak point for me, and I'm always trying to improve upon that. And that's fantastic, and there should be more people like you out there. And they're just
thanks, Emily. Yeah, this was an awesome conversation. It's going for just over an hour now, and we covered a lot. Yeah, how's your tea doing?
I feel bad for your editing team that's gonna cut.
No, it's me.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
How are you doing on tea right now?
I'm done. My tea was fantastic.
I'm done here too.
It's always fun talking to you, and it's great because I don't have, like you said, it's you don't get to talk openly with people, so you're always refreshing, and it's great talking to you.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun hanging out with you, Emily. Cool. We'll wrap it up for our peer. Thank you very much for listener for joining us, and we'll talk to you soon.
Oh, absolutely. I'm just, thank you for having me. And I thought that the subjects that we were going to go over potentially could get me fired. I feel like we played it pretty safe. So
I would have, if I was going to go into those risky topics, I would have given you a fair warning. I would have given you lots of warning and given you some preparation because, you know, non-confrontational.
It would have been interesting. It would have been entertaining, but thank you.
Wait, what were the topics that you didn't want to, that you were like,
Oh, I thought we were like going to dive right into like the deep politics and, you know, my belief systems on X, Y, and Z, which I tell you.
Wait, can make on what?
People uncomfortable. Just X, Y, and Z. Just things. You know, okay. I'm telling you, like, I think I'm pretty rational and logical person, but I can see how I would piss people off even tiptoeing around things.
Yeah. I don't know how to explain it, but there are like certain rational views that are like that upset both the lefties and the righties.
Oh, and that's where I probably lie.
I don't know how to explain it, but just like certain beliefs that I'm just like, oh, like you are not popular. Like,
oh, that's me all the time. And I piss off everybody on all sides. Yeah. It's fun. Not mean just, not to piss people off, but like it, I don't know. Like I said, your you're safe. Yeah, you're safe to talk to. I appreciate it. But, you know, I can see how if you don't pick a side and lean hard into that one side of thinking that you'd piss people off. And a lot of people are just very extreme. And I usually think that there's a better way or a better solution and it can piss everybody off. So,
yeah, like I'm like very lefty, but somehow a lot of the times I'm not lefty enough. Like my interest in like the stock market and like making money, that doesn't fly in a lot of social circles.
Oh, I can understand that.
Yeah, cool.
We'll hang out. Let's hang out soon. Yeah.
Thank you, Emily, for being my guest. Listener, if you are interested in following Emily on social media, you can follow her on Instagram at Emily, EMILY_UH_OH, or in Emily's words,
Emily, uh-oh. 'Cause there's no risk of like accidentally pushing any buttons with my face. Maybe that'll help too.